Okay, we'll be Mamshech, where we're discussing, just as a Hagdama, the very, very close relationship that Rav Dessler had with his uncle, Rav Chaim Oizer, the Goyen Ador. And it's noteworthy to mention that it's not just a close relationship, that there are actually hundreds of letters. And it's really hard to imagine where Rav Chaim Oizer had the time, among the so many things that he was involved in, literally carrying the burden of all the problems, not only in Lithuanian Jewry, but from all over that came to him, where he took the time to really write all of these letters to Rav Dessler. And it's not just that he wrote letters, but we find that he was actually starving, if we could use that word, to hear from his nephew Rav Dessler. He held him in such high esteem. He was a Stam and uncle-nephew relationship. But it was the cover that he had for his nephew, and the warmth that he felt one to another, that if a short while would go by and he would not hear anything. We're talking about Rav Chaim Oizer being in Vilna, and Rav Dessler at that time we're talking about was in London. So he would write, for example, if a while passed, let's say if a week or two, he would say, clearly said, he says, "Lohigiyani michtav mi'itchem." Always interesting, we speak to him like in third person. He said, "Did not receive a letter," he says. He says, "Kimduma might mean," he says, "that probably maybe you've been very busy," but then he says, later on, he says, "Lo'eda manucha," he says, "I can't rest. Like, I'm really waiting to hear how you're doing." I'd like to know if peace is with you, if you're healthy and well. He says, "Avir London v'ha'arofel." How's the fog treating you? Interesting. How's the fog of London treating you? He says, "You al reyosoi and on your wife, v'ha'ilolim on the children." And he says, "V'nolim maher tishuvosem alai," and make sure that you answer quickly. Make sure that you answer quickly, he says, "Ubaze yargiu es ruchi," and thereby you'll calm, he says, "my ruach." So you see how eager he was to hear from him. It is just us. Otherwise, he goes on further. He takes personal pride. One of Rav Dessler's sons was someone who was nifter not so long ago, was Reb Nachum Zev, Reb Nachum Velvel. He was then the leader of the Hebrew Academy in Cleveland. And at that time he was a young boy. So Reb Chaim Oizer says, he says, "Please let me know about," he says, "how the children are developing." And then especially says about the young boy, he says, Reb Nachum Zev, whose father, Rav Dessler, sent him away to learn far because there was no real mokim that he felt to be able to learn properly. So he says, "How is he doing?" He sent him away into Lithuania. He said, "When he becomes bar mitzvah, he continues to send him many, many brachas," and so on and so forth. And then he says, he was very happy, he says, when the son of Rav Dessler visited Rav Chaim Oizer. So he was a great uncle. So he writes the following, he says, "Oy ru'einai, my eyes lit up," he says. "Liroiz b'oy p'nei b'noi," also Bitoy, apparently daughter also. "So machti mi'oid," he says, "liroiz b'yofyom." So happy to see, he says, how beautiful, how wonderful. And he said, "Vinin l'varcham," and I will give them my blessing, "ki yiru nachas mi'itom yegadlu v'yatzlichu," and so on and so forth, and it goes on. Now, when Rav Dessler's father became ill, which that was really his last illness, which he passed away in 1935. Rav Dessler's father's name was Rav Reuven Doiv. And it appears that Rav Dessler did not want to be mitzayer Rav Chaim Oizer. So he did not really tell him too much about the fate of his father. But for some reason, Rav Chaim Oizer, he was able to pick up on it. And he says, it's a pele v'hafli, he says, it's a pele, he says, "Nivhalti v'hikarti," he says, "I'm so surprised, I recognize oisois ho'osoin, I meant there's something dangerous, something very serious taking place. K'loi zochas marovik," you're not talking about your father. Apparently, Rav Dessler would always send regards from his father, would always automatically say how his father is doing. The fact that he didn't mention it, so he really was margish, he really was able to tap in, and says, "The fact is, I see there's something really terrible," and he points out further. He says, "You know what?" He says, "Don't hold back from me," he says. He says, "Al yechachid ahuvi mimeni, v'dag b'levish yisachenu," because there is a cloud of a person has problems, you have to speak it out. Because I'll say, right? "Dag b'levish yisachenu l'acherim," you speak it out, share your pain, your burdens with others, it alleviates it somewhat and makes it easier to bear. So he goes on and says, Reb Chaim Oizer, "Hashem yechaskeyu v'yamtzeyu," and so on and so forth. "V'yoydiyeni hakul b'prutret," I want to know everything in detail. Not just write me plain, just in generalities. I want to know everything, I want to know in detail. And then finally he says, when he realized that he passed away, that Rav Dessler's father passed away, so Rav Chaim Moshe then writes, "Belev kirua umurtach." He says, with a really a torn and ripped apart heart, "Kibalti es mechtova." He received a letter, "Bistalkus oviv hatzadik zechoyen lebracha." Im kishiyarti gam mikoydev. Even though I realized even before, I was able, before I got the notice from you, I already suspected it. He says. And he says, Hamokim Yenachim Moshe, he says, gives the traditional blessing, B'soy Chavei Lesiyim, Nechoma Achas Yeshli, but I have one Nechoma, there's one consolation, he says, Ki Ruven Loimes, your father Ruven really didn't die, same Loshim the Gemara says, Yaakov Vino Loimes, Sheiniach Ben Kamoisoy, because of you. The fact that he left a legacy like you, Rav Dessler, he says, your father really is Loimes, V'gidah Loisoy, and he had raised you, Al Birke HaToyra V'Hayira, we will never forget him, and so on and so forth. So it's very just fascinating to see how Rav Oizer, Chaim Moshe, just took the time, you know, in spite of all the situations we mentioned, the problems of the generation which was on his shoulders, and the father that he writes. So just interesting, just to point out one more thing here, Chaim Moshe himself was quite sickly, also towards the latter part of his life, and so part of the letter was that after Yom Kippur, he writes that he had a wonderful fast, he had an easy fast. He makes a point because he knew that Rav Dessler would be worried, how did Yom Kippur go over him? So he says to him, very interesting, he says, Matzose l'nochen lohidiyoi. I felt it appropriate to let you know, behegdim, as soon as possible. Yoim hatzoim hakodesh over b'sholim. V'hatzoim hoi likal mo'oid. Very easy, no difficulty at all. I didn't have to go through any mysterious nefeshes in fasting. At the same time, he says, when he becomes ultimately, I just want to mention, when Rav Dessler had problems with his eyes, but he had problems with his eyes in the year 1938, he underwent, interesting, at that time underwent an operation. Underwent an operation on his eyes, and Rav Chaim Moshe was very, very much involved with that. Very much involved with that, he says, that his nephew was undergoing this operation. And you know, then when they printed the letters of Achiezer from Rav Chaim Moshe and Chelik Beis, there's about 900 letters there. There's 900 letters. And he asks, you find there that he asks Rav Chaim Moshe, he makes a request from the family to let him know exactly what's happening every 3 days. I want a letter from you. He says, every 3 days I want to receive a letter. He says, what's happening? And after the operation, Chaim Moshe gives him a warning. He says, make sure that you follow exactly, he says, what the doctors are telling you. You don't read and you don't learn until the doctor says it's okay to use your eyes. Don't strain your eyes. So he says to him, Didi Chavivi. He says, no, please. Lebli lavoir al divrei haroife. He says, mommy's like a father. He says, make sure that you don't, right? That you don't defy the words of the doctors until they give you permission to write and to be able to be miayim. Rav Dessler did a lot of learning by heart. There's a chelik choshev, a kuntres that he wrote, which is called Kuntres Achesed, which hopefully maybe we'll get to that. But that whole Kuntres Achesed was something that he did this all by heart, and then was committed to writing by one of his talmidim. But that was the tkufa, when he underwent that period with the eyes, so he was machadish, his whole shmuz, his whole idea, his whole concept, his whole philosophy about chesed, which is known as the Kuntres HaChesed. Just to mention that, that was during that tkufa of his operation. But could I have to mention this nekudah, that at that time actually he had two problems, he had problems with both eyes. So it's not just one problem, it's two problems. He had problems with two eyes, and they were operated on both eyes. What were the results? One eye came out good, the second eye was not so good. No, so as a result, the second eye was not so good, so the family insisted that he undergoes another operation. And it was another operation. And Rav Dessler said as follows, he says, listen, if you undergo another operation, it means I won't be able to learn, he says, for another couple of weeks. That's what it's going to mean. Even though it's only one eye, but they're not going to want me to strain my eyes. So I'm not going to be able to learn. So you know what? Efshi. I cannot hold back. So for learning, one eye will do. One eye is okay. I'll manage with one eye. To do the second eye, he says, which is going to hold me back from learning again, he says, I can't. And I'll manage quite well with one eye. So here's interesting, just a concept of a godel. Just want to mention, Rav Chaim Moshe, of course, was nifter before Adessa. Rav Chaim Moshe was nifter, it was in Chodesh Av in 1940. 1940, Chaim Moshe was nifter. This literally tore apart Rav Dessler. He took it, I'm not sure which was, hard to say, he lost a father, he lost a second father, by the patira of Rav Chaim Moshe. And he wrote a kinah, actually he wrote an elegy. He wrote an elegy expressing his tzar. He said, there's nothing that can equal, he says, that can bring me nechoma, he says. The minu kol hayomim, he said, we always imagined that behechrech yarech lichyos ad bias haMashiach. Rav Dessler said, I was positive that Rav Chaim Moshe will have to live until Mashiach comes. He said, why? Why? Why do I imagine that Rav Chaim Moshe will have to live until Mashiach comes? Because hayochol doer umlal zeh. Can this door, which is so fraught with problems, can it exist without the guidance of a person like Chaim Moshe? It's unimaginable, because Baruch would take him away and just allow, he said, the generation with all of its problems to go on without. I was convinced, he says, I was certain that you, Rabbi Chaim Moshe, that you would live. The Achshav, he says, Ha'im be'emes is the true, Lukach adineinu maleinu is the true, that our master has been taken away. And so on and so forth, he says. This is actually true Churban Beis HaMikdash, and so on. So again, this is just again some of the little bit, little details about the great relationship, as again, of Rav Dessler and Rav Chaim Moshe. Just want to mention just one other nekudah. If you might remember that last week, that when we concluded this year, actually, we pointed out the ma'aseh that was a Friday in 1951, Chodesh Kislev. It was the first Friday night when Rav Chaim Eliezer, well, it was Rav Dessler actually, who lost his wife. So the first Shabbos that he was alone. So you might remember then at that particular time, so he had this bocher that was with him, so he shouldn't be alone, and so on and so forth. Hey, the bocher was setting the table and everything else. And the nekuda was that on the table, it was before Shabbos, and the bocher was preparing everything, and you had the tablecloth, and you had the silverware, and you had the chalas, and you had the kreis, the kiddush cup. And remember we mentioned that Rav Dessler told the Talmud, he says, put back this kiddush cup, and take out the other one that's on the shelf. Take out the other one that's on the shelf. And the Talmud was very surprised. He didn't understand what happened. First of all, what difference would it be which kiddush cup, which kreis is using? And they realized it was not the time to ask now, but later on, Lamaisa, he asked them the question, what's the idea of changing the cup? So remember the very interesting answer that Rav Dessler gave him. And he pointed out, he says, that all the years that Rav Dessler was married, right since he was married, we mentioned in the year of 1920. So all the years that Rav Dessler was married, he always made Kiddush on the kois that he and his wife received as a wedding gift from Rav Chaim Moshe. Remember we mentioned that? The kiddush cup that they used since the time that they were married was the kois that they received as a wedding present from Rav Chaim Moshe. And remember, Rav Chaim Moshe received that kois himself as a wedding present from Rav Sol Salanter. So that in fact was Rav Sol Salanter's kois that gave as a present Rav Chaim Moshe. Rav Chaim Moshe continued to give that kois, he gave it to Rav Dessler. When Rav Dessler was solicited by the Ponovich Rav to come to become the Mashgiach, right, of Ponovich, and therefore now he relocated from England, he relocated to where? To Eretz Yisrael, to Bnei Brak. The first Shabbos in Bnei Brak, Rav Dessler used a different kois. And being that his Rebbetzin saw that he's not using the one that you're always using, so he asked him, how come? How come you're switching the kois? But Dessler explained, because now we're living in Bnei Brak. And in Bnei Brak he says, the Poisek in Bnei Brak is the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish, we know, has a larger shear. And he says, the Kiddush cup that we were using, he said, is not according to the shear of the Chazon Ish. Now, you only feel it's befitting that we are now living in Bnei Brak, that we abide by the Piskei Dinim, according to the Chazon Ish, and which is a larger kois, and therefore he wanted to use the larger cup. The Rebbetzin saw it and she disagreed. She said, listen, if that cup was good enough for Chaim Moshe, it's good enough for Rav Sol Salanter, it's got to be good for everyone. And if you remember Rav Dessler, being the good husband that he was, he acquiesced. Okay, he switched back to the old cup. However, now that she passed away, the first Friday night that he was alone, he told the bocher not to take the other one, which is the cup, the shear of the Chazon Ish. So interesting, we mentioned then that Dayan Ehrentraut was the one who actually related that story. And somebody asked the question. He says, Then it says, if Rav Dester was so sensitive, he says, to his wife's feeling, shouldn't it have been continued to use the kois, right, that she treasured even after her death? It seemed like she died, okay, I'm going back to the old kois. He was very sensitive to her feelings. So then it says, there's also another maise, which is very interesting, very short. It was a relative of Rav Dester noticed that Rav Dester actually, that he was polishing his shoes. He was polishing his shoes, he says, mamish before he left to the levaya of his rebbetzin. He was polishing his shoes. And this relative was astounded. You're going to the levaya of his rebbetzin, what are you polishing your shoes for? So he said, because she was always so meticulous that my clothes should be spotless before I left the house, I'm fulfilling her will even though she's not here. Which clearly means that he was sensitive to her wishes even after. So as long as there were other gedoy lador to rely on, so Sholem Bayis tipped the scale. Right, but afterwards he couldn't do that because it conflicted with the Chazinish. So that was it when it was a matter of halacha. But otherwise, he still maintained that loyalty and that ibegiyimkeit that he had. So again, we can learn from Gedolei Yisrael, of course, in every area. You should see how they practice, which Sholem Bayis meant to them, and that's the sensitivity of a Gedolei Yisrael, true Baal Musar. So we're going to look at now, Rabbi Yisai, we're going to look here in the Michtav Eliyahu, page 15. If you have it in your pamphlet. Page 15 here, as you see, the title is Madrega Hachi Ketana Shel Zchus Ovis, which is the lowest level at which Zchus Ovis operates. Madrega Hachi Ketana, he says, Shel Zchus Ovis, which is the lowest level at which Zchus Ovis operates. And Rav Dester starts as follows in Michtav Eliyahu. He says, Hine lepiyomim, he said many times, he says, Yechaber ho'odom eilov eze dover asher yachpo ishlo yoivid memenu. Right? Yeah, look, Rabbi, a person, for example, if you have a bunch of keys or a watch, you don't want to lose it. So what will he do? So many times it'll go is he'll attach it by a chain of some sort. Now he has no use for the chain itself. It's only there for the sake of the object which is important to him. So he has the chain as a medium to be able to connect with the object that he wants. As he goes on to say, let's read it again. Many times, Yechaber Odomel of the person will attach himself, right? Eze Dover, Asher Yachpois, it might be a watch or keys, that he doesn't want to lose, Shlo Yoiv Menu, who Mechaber El Asmois, what does he do? He chains it to himself. He chains his Mechaber, he connects that item, Al Yidei Shal Sheles. Kemoshoin could be a watch, right? The watch is, has a chain, sometimes could be a gold chain, could be a metal chain, right? Or Mateches or some keys. Now, even though he connects the chain, right, to himself, it's not because he needs the chain. He needs the watch. But in order to be able to connect the watch, so he has the chain. And even though he has no tayelis, he has no purpose. He has no purpose. There's no meaning in the chain itself for himself. He doesn't really need the chain. But the purpose of that chain is l'chaberis akli ha'nochet seylov. However, the purpose of that chain is in order to be able to connect the item that it really wants. That would be the watch or keys. Shelo yufsak mimenu v'yoyved. Right? That it shouldn't separate and get lost. Now, if you can imagine, if he has no real intrinsic use of the chain itself, you can imagine a chain, let's say, has 5-10 links. Certainly an individual link is even less of cheshivas, because the entire chain is not really, has no intrinsic cheshivas. So he says further, the imbishal shelis atzmo ein cheshivas zulas atachlis aniskeris. If the chain itself does not really have any real importance, only the purpose, which is to connect the watch or the keys, halikolchkin, so certainly, he says, she'ei cheshivas klal tabas achas. So certainly there's no real importance to him. Each individual link should be toicha shel shelis. But nevertheless, he needs each and every link. He needs it. Makol mokoyim, hatzoyrechu el kol tabas v'tabas. But nevertheless, it's important, right, that he has each and every link because he needs it to make up the chain. Kim tufsak afile rak tabas achas, because even if one link, right, breaks, what happens is then he loses the chain. Yis batal achibur kuloi, v'cheifetz yufsak min odom v'yoivad. This is a moshel to much a greater, bigger picture to understand how Kodesh Baruch Hu in one area runs the world. And that is, the chain, which is really not of intrinsic value to him, the only reason he has the chain is because he does not want to lose the watch, or the other thing that's important to him. So he needs the chain in order to be able to connect with the item, which is really his true purpose. Now, says Rav Dester, Al Pi Yoifin Kozei, with this analogy, we can now understand the lowest possible level of, he says, how Schus Ovois operates. Binyan Schus Ovois, which means as follows. Haloi Yivtiach Hashem Yizborach Loves HaKadoshim. Kadosh Baruch Hu promised our forefathers. Kadosh Baruch Hu promised our ancestors, Ki Tachlis Kol HaBriya Kula, that the purpose of all of creation would be realized through them and through their descendants. It's only through the Jewish people that the purpose of creation becomes realized. Everything else is ancillary. So that is clear. Kadosh Baruch Hu was mavtiach to the Ovos HaKadoshim, Ki Tachlis Kol HaBriya Kula, Teitze Mehem. That the purpose of all creation would be realized through them, through the Ovos and their descendants. The Zaron. The Chol Ho'osid HaGodoyli says, and the great future, which will bring out Kiddush Hashem, when will the ultimate Kiddush, when the time when Mashiach comes. But there's a journey, from the time of the Ovos, from Yitzchak V'Yaakov, till Mashiach comes, there's a journey. The Chol Ho'osid HaGodoyli, Ashizgadol V'Yizkadish Shmoy Shal Kedboch Alein Koil, and the great future, in which the name of Hashem will be magnified and sanctified before the eyes of all mankind, when will that be? Haloyiyah Al Yedei Mashiach Tzidkenu. That, of course, will be through Mashiach. However, many generations have to first go between the others till Mashiach. That's a fact. In other words, he says, Avo, Haloy Mavrom Avinu Olav HaSholem, Adoyer Shol Mashiach, Yeshnam Doyers Harbe. There are many generations that first will have to pass from Avram Avinu till Mashiach. And he points out, the kulam yoytzim elu me'elu, every generation comes out of the previous generation. Kmo yashal shelus arucha, that's the chain. You have many generations, which really, that's not what we meant by creation. You have many, many generations from the time of the Ovos till Mashiach comes. You're going to have many generations. The behavior of those generations are far from the purpose of creation. But yet they are there because they are the chain, the link between Avraham Avinu until Mashiach. Should the chain break in the middle, you would not have the continuous Hemshech HaDoyeres to be able to reach Mashiach. So says Rav Dessler, he says, you have so many generations, which basically means is, the generations are linked one to another like the links of a long chain. And he goes on to say, Asher, he says, Taboiseo Devuko Izubazu. The generations are linked to one another like the links of a long chain. That's how one generation, right, is the procursor to the next generation, so on the other generation. Uboifen kazeh yesh doyres or yechidim. There could be individuals or even whole generations. Their own schus of living, right, they don't have enough, they don't really have a schus. They don't really have a schus to exist. You know why they're existing? To be able to bring the next generation. And that generation also may not have really a schus kium, but they have a schus kium to produce the next generation, another link, to be able to realize till we have ultimately the Doyer Shal Mashiach, as he says. You can have many generations or individuals. Shall be mishpat maseim, judging them by their actions, einam ruyim l'skayim. Why do they exist? You know why? Because they have to be the link to the next link, to the next link, to the next link, because we have to have the chain that leads from Avraham Avinu, we have to reach the Doyer Shal Mashiach. It's many, many years. There are many, many years from the time of Avraham Avinu to Mashiach. So you have to have a chain which is made up of links. The links are each generation and all the various individuals in between. One link connect to another link. So even though each individual of those generations themselves are based upon their actions, they don't have a schus to exist. But the reason that they're existing is because they have to be the chain. We need them as a chain in order to be able to realize, he says, the ultimate purpose, he says. Their personal merits do not give them the right to go on existing. But being that they are part of Klal, we're talking about Jews, by the way, talking about Jewish people, based upon their behavior. He says, Al Mekomu Kemiskaimi, but nevertheless, they do exist. Even going basically by judging them, right? Judging them by their personal merits, they do not have enough schus to confer upon them the right to exist. But they do exist. Why? Because being that they are part of Klal Yisrael, they exist, not in all schus. Note why they exist? They exist in the schus of the Ovois and the descendants to make up that link, to connect the Ovois to the time of Mashiach, to those generations. Loi b'schus atzmam. The reason that those many generations are existing, is as Ela b'schus avoiseyem, is because of their forebears, the tzetzoeim and the descendants. As he says, because ki ador hazeh, because those individuals, right, Oyanoshim Alolu, Heimokamoitabas, these are like links in a shalshalas. Even though we said there's no intrinsic reason, I don't need the chain for the chain. I need the watch. But in order to watch to remain close to me, I have to have the chain. generations are the chain. These are the links from time of Avraham Avinu to time of Mashiach. They may not be intrinsic value in the chain itself, because according to their behavior, sometimes those generations do not have schusim to really exist, but they are still there. It's because they are the tabas, they are the links, bishal shelas achibur ahi, ubezehi sibis kiyumam. And that's the sibah that gives them the right to exist, kibilodayam, because without those middle generations, they have to exist. Because without them, the connection between the fathers and the future would be lost. So the connection between the fathers and the future, you need the chain in the middle. You need those generations. Kibilodayam, because without them, ein chibur ben avisayim ledoiris yavoyu. Odom kozeh, he says. So we now find out that a person is able to exist not because there's any schus at all. Not because there's any schus. Because we need him as a chain. That's what he is. All he is. He's a chain between the ovois. That's called schus ovois, yeah? What means schus ovois? Schus ovois means we need him, that he should be the link. He should be the chain between the ovois and the future generations. Odom asher kazeh yiskayim bo'olam hazeh. Here you see one way which a person would exist in this world without any personal schus whatsoever. It says, af she'ein l'shum schus lozem etzar asamoy. And Rav Dessler says, what I'm telling you, he says, we find it in the Gemara. The Gemara used it for something else. But that, he says, this idea is nothing new, what I'm telling you, he says. We find a similar thought, he says, umotzinu geder zeh b'gemara b'vikame. We find this type, this getter, we find the Gemara b'vikame. The Gemara b'vikame, daf lamed ches. There's a pasuk you might remember, it says, al totzar asamoyah. Let me give you a little bit of background. Chumash talks about that when the Bnei Yisrael were passing the Gvul of Moav, the boundary going into Moav. So the Bnei Yisrael, right, going through the Midbar, 40 years in the Midbar, finally ready to want to go into Eretz Yisrael, and they're passing through the boundaries of Moav. Moshe Rabbeinu at first thought that it must be surely permitted to invade their territory. Moshe Rabbeinu made a cheshbon that we should have a right to invade their territory and to destroy them. Why? He made a simple kal v'chomer. You realize the Midyanim, Kodesh Baruch Hu said regarding the Midyanites, the Midyanim, Tzorei is a Midyanim. Kodesh Baruch Hu said regarding to the Midyanim, then go after them. Go after the Midyanim. Now, the Midyanim really, what was the riches of the Midyanim? Why do they deserve to be destroyed? Well, the Midyanim actually, they were only, as we say, a support system which basically taught and they caused the Moyovim to seduce the Bnei Yisrael. In other words, the Midyanim didn't actually really sin with the Bnei Yisrael. What the Midyanim did is they helped Moyov. So they were just assisting Moyov. So Moshe made a chepash cheshm. If Midyanim deserved to be destroyed because they only assisted Moyov to do bad, Moyov did the bad. So Moyov did the bad. So if the Torah says, Tzorar is a Midyanim v'yikisa Moysom, and the avil of Midyan is only that they assisted Moav, so Moav themselves, right? They were the cause, their daughters were cursed to sin with the Bnei Yisrael. So Moav certainly, right? I would have a right to destroy them. Because Baruch said no. Why? Let's take a look. Al totzar es Moav. Right? Contrary to you, Moshe Rabbeinu, you think that you would have a right to invade Moav. No! Al totzar es Moav. Do not destroy Moav. Moshe Rabbeinu thought, no, Moshe kal v'chomer b'atzmoi. Moshe made a kal v'chomer illogical, right? He came to a logical conclusion, I should be able to invade Moav. Why? Because after all, he said, Moav is worse than Midyan. Uma Midyanim shloi bo elo la'azoi l'moav. That's the Gemara b'vikamet. If the Midianites only assisted Moav, right, in the evil scheme to seduce the Bnei Yisrael into immorality. So the Midianites only assisted Moav to seduce the Bnei Yisrael. And we were commanded, right? Right, we're commanded to destroy Moav, Midian. So Moav, right, were the instigators of the scheme. How much more should they be liable for punishment? Right? Moavim atzim olikoshkin. Because Baruch says, no, I have a different plan. Moav should not be destroyed. The reason is an incredible reason. Let's take with the reason. So he says, Omalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Loi kishe olso al datcho ol soldati. Said HaKadosh Baruch Hu, no, do not attack Moav, because my thoughts are not like yours. I have a different cheshbon. What's the cheshbon? The cheshbon is, I need Moav to exist. It's an incredible thing. I need Moav, the entire Moav. Why do I need Moav? I need Moav because there are two beautiful doves that have to come out of Moav. There are two precious gifts to come out of Moav. Shtei preidos toivos yeshli lohitzim mehem. Right, there are two precious doves that are going to come out of these two nations, Amu and Moav. And that is, he says, Rus HaMoavio. Rus is to come out of Moav, of course, who was the great-grandmother of David HaMelech. So, right, so we need Rus. who is going to be the great grandmother of David HaMelech, and Venama HaMoinis, and also Nama, who is the wife of Shlomo HaMelech. Nama was the wife of Shlomo HaMelech. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, listen to this, what's happening. You have to appreciate what it says here. HaKadosh Baruch Hu had pity, it means here. What it means, HaKadosh Baruch Hu really had pity on two nations of wicked people, did not destroy them. Bishul Shtei Predis, says Rav Dessler, Chas HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ashtei Umois, Gedoyle Shol Rishoyim, Veloi Hichrivam. Did not destroy him. In other words, what you see from here even a stronger link, even a stronger form of a link that was mentioned. In other words, realize what's happening over here. What's happening over here is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right, is prepared to maintain, right, in existence successive generations. That's what we're being told. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is allowing to maintain successive generations of wicked people for the sake of one tzaddik or two. It's an unbelievable thing. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is prepared to maintain successive generations of wicked people for the sake of one individual tzaddik or tzaddikus, that one day will emerge from them. One day, not today, not tomorrow. One day, a certain tzaddik or a certain tzaddikus will come out. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is prepared to maintain an existence successive generations. Right? Which means, again, just understand it, a little bit more dramatic. It means that a whole nation, with its culture, with its arts, with its sciences, right? Its sciences, its economics, its wars, its cruelties, its idolatries. Everything will be kept around for centuries. To what end? For the sake of one individual who ultimately will rebel against them, right? It's like Rus is going to come out. We're going to rebel against them. When we find Rus, her outstanding acts, of course, we saw of chesed and self-sacrifice, that placed her, right, she remains as one of the spiritual giants, right, in the history of Kol Yisrael. We learn a lesson of relative value. We learn a lesson of relative value, how to look at something, how to be able to evaluate something, what's important, what's not. When you see a chesed for Kodesh Baruch Hu, can allow successive generations of wicked people, because it can be one tzaddik. First of all, we have no idea what means one tzaddik. First of all, you have an idea now to imagine what it means one tzaddik. Koyach of one tzaddik. What one tzaddik means to Klal Yisrael. It also means that all of a sudden we find out just a little bit. We have a little bit of a glimpse. What we find out is an insight sometimes into the motives and the purposes behind Hashem's control of the world. People ask, how could Baruch allow these Rishoyim to exist? So many Rishoyim, generation ready to exist. Baruch maybe knows that we need them for one tzaddik. One tzaddik is going to come out of here. One tzaddik is going to come out of here. Al potza as Moyev, don't destroy Moyev. Yeah, pencil and paper, working it out. If you're allowed to destroy Midian, then Moyev for sure. Hashem says, yeah, I run the world. I have a different cheshem. You don't see my cheshem. You don't understand the future. You don't see the future. You don't know what I have in mind and what the plan in the order of the order of the world. This is the Shalshalus. That's what Rav Dessler says. So now we find out this also, he says, gives us some understanding. He says how to appreciate a little bit. Some Rosh of a Toivloi. We need him as a link in the chain. So Rosh has, why is Rosh around? Why does Hashem allow him to be around? You don't know. He might be a link in a chain. He's a link in a chain. You don't see the other link, which is coming out of that, and the next link, and the next link. He's a link in a chain, because Baruch Hu sees it. A little bit, says Rav Dessler, a little bit to understand that. And we go further. Then he goes to Perek Gimel. Oid Migidrei, he says, further. He says, Oid Migidrei, Harachmim L'Rosha. Also to understand other aspects of Hashem's mercy to the Rishoyim. Right? This is the old Kasha. Kind of a mercy, Hashem's mercy to the Rishoyim. So he goes like this. The truth is, we make a common mistake when you see a Russia, right, prospering. So what do we think? What do we think of that? How do we, in our own minds, try to explain it? Person, a non-believer, so he says, forget it. He says, listen, the world just, everything happens by chance. We're talking about a person who's a mammon. So if you're a mammon, you're a believer, and you try, well, the easiest thing is to say, and that's the truth, we don't understand how Hashem runs the world. That's the truth. We don't understand. But if you try to make some sense of it, and you ask yourself, how come this Russia is prospering? Says Rav Dessler, Kol Asher Yimtza Chaya Nachas Boilam Azeh. Right? You come across a person who lives a life of ease in this world, but does not seem to deserve it. Ve'ein Menu Roy Lo Zeh B'Sitkas Masov. Based upon his actions, he does not deserve it. Hurgalnu lachshoiv, so he says. So many times we usually think that maybe this is an extreme example of midas harachmen. The Kodesh Baruch Hu, right, is exercising, there is a concept of midas harachmen, that maybe for some reason this person happens to be the beneficiary of an extreme hanhog of midas harachmen. The Kodesh Baruch Hu, instead of using midas adin, uses midas harachmen. Hurgalnu lachshoiv. It's common to think, he says, Shemagi aloizoiz b'midas harachmen. The reason that this Rosh it really has all of these benefits, it might be clearly because this is the workings of Hashem's Midas HaRachman. Omnom, says Rav Dessa, however, Ab Shinira, that even though it appears, Kuma Shabbam Midas HaRachman, even though it appears that this is only because Midas HaRachman turned the page, Yesh Asher Einenu Berachmim Klal. But it may well be that its prosperity is not Beklal. It has nothing to do with Midas HaRachman. So where does it come from? If it's not Misad Midas HaRachim, and his actions don't deserve it, so why? So where does he get all this prosperity? So he says, take a look, Mikra Mefurishu, and he wants to explain that posik. There's a Beferish posik. The Beferish posik says, Umishalim L'soinov, it's a posik that needs to be explained as he's going to explain it. We heard of that posik, we know that posik. It's a posik that says, Umishalim L'soinov El Ponov L'Havidoi. Because Yibar who repays his enemies, right, to his face in order to destroy them. In other words, sometimes they get paid to be destroyed. What does it mean? He's paying them. He's giving them good fortune to destroy them. What does that mean? So, the Targum comes along, and Chazal tells us, Vayin Shom B'Targum. What it means is, Shakadosh Baruch Hu Mishalem Socha Toiv L'Rishoyim Ba'ad Mitzvoseyim Bo'elam Hazeh. It means, Kadosh Baruch Hu pays the wicked the reward of their Maisim Toiv in this world in order to uproot them from the next world. In other words, they're going to be deprived from Olam Haba. So when you see the Rosh prospering, it means he's getting schar for his mitzvahs on this world. And the truth is, it's a tremendously losing deal. Because remember, as Rav Dessler pointed out, we had a different essay, right, one of the earlier essays, that the reason Hashem does not pay schar in this world, because if you would take all the pleasures of this world, not in this generation, from the time of creation, if you take all the pleasures of the world from the time of creation, right, of all the millions of people in each generation, take all of their pleasures, right, and add it to the next generation, next, and put it, right, and try to capsulize it, right, into one point, it would not amount, he says, even to a fraction of the schar of Olam Haba. Which means to say is that there's no commodity in this world that's able even to pay schar, a fraction, a millionth, a trillionth of schar of a mitzvah of Olam Haba. There's nothing in this material world that could amount to the schar of Olam Haba. And that's why there's not. So the Rosh, on the other hand, so you see that, right? So you see that he's what's prospering. What Kodesh Baruch Hu did is, he shortchanged him. Now, that's what's going to explain. How's it fair to shortchange anybody? What do you mean he's shortchanging him? In other words, he's paying the schar of his mitzvahs on this world. In other words, even a Rosh has mitzvahs. So there may be that many mitzvahs, even though Chazal say, I feel the Rishoyim Shibach Malay mitzvahs Karimoin. Right? Mayadnesses. So for the mitzvahs, so instead of having Olam Haba, Kodesh Baruch Hu pays him on this world. Looking at it, you know, with our earthly eyes, we say, how's it fair? Because with our earthly eyes, our imagination and our realization is Olam Haba is something that's very abstract to us. So anything meaningful is only meaningful in our human minds is this world. If it's good on this world, then it's good. If it's bad on this world, it's bad. But that's a big mistake, because that is being very, very short-sighted and not really understanding, as Ramchal points out in Mesil Sisharim, right, what the next world is really all about. This world is just a very short. In terms of eternity, this is just a dot, right? This world, the whole existence of this world, even since the time of creation, is just a dot in relation to the world of eternity, which is the next world. And therefore, true, what should be defined as true good and true pleasure, is really what is defined in the next world with something which you can't even imagine, says Ramchal. Not even to imagine, there's nothing that I can point out in this world, right in the beginning, in the Mesil Sesharim, he says, there's nothing even, somebody want to give a moshel, he says, this is something like this. There's nothing in this world, he says, that I can show you to give you a moshel about the pleasures of the next world. Basking in the glory of Hashem. So with our mind, with our earthly minds, we see a Russian that's prospering. Says, how's he prospering? We don't realize. He was shortchanged. Because why? Because for the one mitzvah that he did, or the two, or the three, or the four, in Olam Haba, he would have got much, we think he would have got much, much more. Right? Should have got much, much more. As we pointed out once, Rabbi Chonon asked once the Chofetz Chaim. There was a strafe in Ran. There was a houses burned down, and they needed to raise money to rebuild. It's in the end of the Sefer Kovis Oris on Yevomis. So you have some Chidush Agodas, some Shemuzim, Rav Chonah Wasserman. Chonah was a Talmud of the Chofetz Chaim as well. That was Talmud of Chaim Brisker, but it's Talmud of Chofetz Chaim. And the Chofetz Chaim there needed that an ad should be placed in the local newspaper regarding that money is needed to rebuild the houses that were burned down. And the publisher of that newspaper was a Yid, but it was a Fry, he was a secular Jew. Did not believe into much, and so on and so forth. And it just turned out that they got into a little bit of a schmooze, and the publisher of the newspaper, he says to Chofetz Chaim, he says, you see, Rebbe, he says, I don't keep Shabbos, he says, I don't eat kosher, he says, I do any of the mitzvahs, I'm prospering, he said. Look, in my life as well, I have good health, and my business is going well. So how does it shtim? How does it shtim with the hashkofa that we are being told that only if you keep the mitzvahs? I don't keep. So Chofetz Chaim says, the fact that you're asking me about something that you were taught as a young child that you have to do mitzvahs. So it means that you, at least once in your life, you said, did you ever recite Krishna Shema Yisrael? Once in your life, maybe as a young child, did you ever say, yeah, I said even after my bar mitzvah, I said Shema Yisrael once, twice in my life. Chofetz Chaim said, guess what? For the ones that you said Shema Yisrael, you deserve even much more than you got in this world. You're being shortchanged, he says. Because you have no idea what the schar is even for one mitzvah. So it's a fact that you say you're not keeping anything else, but for the one mitzvah that you did in your life. So imagine how many more mitzvahs if you would have done, how many more mitzvahs, and what would be reserved in this world. So it means that you got everything. You got everything on this world. You deserve even more than you got, because the price of a mitzvah is no way. There's nothing in this world really that can match up to really the price of a mitzvah. As I mentioned, Rabbi Victor Miller used to say many times, just to give you an idea, what is the schar of a mitzvah? If I like to pay you, schar of a mitzvah, I'd like to write out a check. So Victor Miller would always use the most, just imagine putting on a check, he says, take a check, put it on the table. I'm writing out a check, he says, now for a mitzvah, yeah? I want to pay you for a mitzvah. So I put on one, start writing zeros. I get to the end of the paper, the end of the check, there's no room, so I keep writing down on the desk, right? I keep writing this, and there's no room anymore, so I go down to the next desk, to the next desk, I continue on to the next house, and I go down to the next block, and to the next room, to the next city, I keep writing zeros, he says, to the end of the world, he says. It's hard for us even to imagine such a thing, because again, with the limited way that our minds are able to comprehend, but that's what it means. Schar mitzvah b'hai malekit. So Rav Dessler, he wants to talk about that. He says, comes up that the Rosh, if he did a mitzvah, then look, he deserves to get paid for the mitzvah. Why is he being taken shortchanged? In other words, he should get punished for what he's doing bad. But if he did a mitzvah, then he should get schar right the way the mitzvah deserves to be paid for. So he asked the Kvar Shaal Rabim. So Rav Dessler says, many asked the question. Many have asked the question, he points out, Ha'im derech mishpat v'tzedeku, is this fair and just? Is this fair and just, he says, Ashaloi dai she'anishu l'roshah ba'ad kol avirosov, not only, right, not only that the Rosh is going to be punished, because obviously the Rosh, by the way, he'll be punished in the next world. So not only be punished in the next world, but he's not even getting the real schar, because the schar is getting paid on this world, so he's not even getting real schar either. So not only is he going to be punished, right, but also does he have to lose the reward of the few mitzvahs by having it paid this world? That means he's losing. Because Baruch Hu giving him and paying him on this world, he's really losing the reward. So is that fair? Gam yikhu mimenu schar mitzvahs hama'ata shaloi v'yishalmu lo ischaroi rak boilam hazeh. Right? Rak boilam hazeh. Shubem is hevel havolim, he says. The truth is, all the good that the Rosh is getting on this world, it's really hevel havolim, schar mitzvah b'amalekit. It's only, right? It's only with our material mindset, right? With our material mindset on this world, it appears that this is called prosperity. But really, it'd be shortchanged. Because you really deserve much, much more, which is left for the next world, and he's not going to get it anymore. So how would that be fair? And he goes on to say, and he goes on to say that there are many ways. He says, sometimes we understand Hashem's way, sometimes not. But Rav Dessler says, this is something that I'm going to explain to you. I think we should stop over here, and we'll continue with this Bez Hashem next week, because to do proper justice to it, but I go a little bit to the sheet, which also addresses the question that Rav Dessler, and there's another thought also. Rav Dessler has a different mahalach, which we'll do next week. But I want you to go to the sheet, so I'll be able to get a little bit more of an insight regarding this question. Question is, right again, right, how's it fair that the Rosh, not only he will be punished ultimately in the next world, but even the reward he lost, because by giving him to this world, he really lost his reward. Because Baruch Hu, as it were, seems he have took him took his reward away from him. So we take a look here. We see here on the sheet we have, this is from a sefer called Chaim Sheish Bohem, which is an interesting maisa here, which really explains it. It starts out also with Yaakov Avinu and Esav. We have Avimkos Becheros Ola Yaakov. When we have Avimkos Becheros Ola Yaakov, we find that Esav sells the Becheros to Yaakov. So it brings down that the sefer part of the Esav brings down Bishem Kosnasoyer. The sefer Kosnasoyer was the Mechaber, was the Ponim Eirois, one of the great Goyin of Goyin Av Bezen Eisenstadt. Rabbi Yonison Eibshitz, was the Talmud of the Ponim Eirois as well. Ponim Eirois was of the Goyin Ahador. He brings down the Kushas Oilam, how you do it. The Velz Kasha was, it's clear that the value of the Bechere, right? There's no way, right, to be able to evaluate, you know, the cheshivas of the Bechere. So, didn't Yaakov really cheat Esav out of something by giving him an Azid Adashim, by giving him a pot of stew? You know, was it really fair that Esav should lose the Bechere for something called for the Nezid Adashim? Keitzar im kein kone Yaakov za Bechere me Esav ben Nezid Adashim by a pot of stew, which is a pot of lentils, literally. Hare lefi aloche eina meka chal kashi yesh oino a yoysa mishtu. The aloche is, you know, if a buyer and a seller, if a seller defrauds a buyer, or vice versa, a buyer defrauds a seller, if it's more than a sixth, right, more than a sixth, then the mekach is botel. Here clearly Esav, right, it was defrauded by way more than a sixth. He got much less, all he got for the Bechere, he got the Bechere in Zid Adashim. So he goes out to point out, and this is based on really on the Haflor. And the Nikud is that the Haflor points out, and the Haflor basically says the Yisoid as follows. He says, and going with this Mahalach, it's not an easy thing to take. The Haflor says that you know what the Schar of the Mitzvah is? The Schar of the Mitzvah says the Haflor, Rebbe Chassam Sofer is, as much as you value the mitzvah. As much as you value the mitzvah. If you value the mitzvah to a greater degree, the schar of that mitzvah will also be given to you. But if in your own eyes, the value of the mitzvah is so little, he says, then guess what? That is the value of your mitzvah. And the maaser, go to number two, so we can save time here a little bit. Go down to number two, a little bit lower. And you see, the maaser was like this. Namchishin Yezeh, he says, we can bring this a little bit more to reality, this thought. Adi Sipur HaMuvit is in the Sefer Sipur HaChasidim. It's a very interesting maaser with the Apter Ruf. The Apter Ruf was the Talmud of the Magid of Mezrich, of the Rebbe Rebbeir. Yehudi Soicher was the Yid Soicher she Yorad Mugdulosoy. The Yid Soicher who lost his fortune. A Yid Soicher, a businessman, he lost his fortune, the Ibed is called Rechusha. He lost everything that he owned. Ubita Haboygeris Segiel Apirka, then he had an older daughter, it was time to get married, but he has nothing to marry off, he had no money to marry her off. So upon the Larava Kodesh Ma'apta Zecha Sadak Gavrocha. So he comes to the Apter Ruf. That maybe the Rebbe will give him a bracha, will be my rachmim. Ubishilas etze to ask an etze malasois. Shualoi harav. So the Rebbe asked him, "Kamuhut zorech l'nesuah bitoy? How much do you need to marry off your daughter?" So he's become a yeshloi. How much do you need? How much do you have? So he says like this. Hey Shiva, he answered, "Shizoki kula 1,000 rublim. I need 1,000 rubles." The kisarei kisar, and I don't have even 1 ruble. So I need 1,000 rubles, he says. The Einor, he has 1 ruble, he says. Then a ruble echad, he said. Omalei Rav, so the Rebbe said, 1 ruble you have? Here's my yetzer. He says, go into town, go to the market, and the first business that comes along your way, do it. Invest that ruble. That was, go to the market, we have hundreds of businesses, right? People are coming and going. The first business that comes along your way, go and do it. Invest in that business. So he says, Leich Lisholem, he says, Tahamischer Harishin, she's Daman Luchotasa. The first business that comes along your way, I want you to do that business. Vashem Yasliach Darkecho, and the Kushbach will give you Atzlocha. Tamo Ish, he couldn't understand it. Eze Mischer, he said, how can you do business without money? I have 1 ruble when it's invested. First business come away. Okay, with 1 ruble, what kind of business can I do without? How can you get involved in business without money? But he believes his Rebbe, this is what the Rebbe said to do. The Rebbe said, this is what I do. Going along the way, he goes into a hotel. And he sees that there are business people dealing with diamonds. See, there are diamond merchants in the hotel there. So he goes to the table. This Yid goes over to the table where the merchants are sitting around it. The Hizchel is Bainan, right? And he starts to look around. He also starts to look at the diamonds. So one of the Soichims, one of the business people, he sees that he takes interest. He sees that this person, this strange person, is taking interest in the diamonds. So one of the Soichim, one of the merchants asks him, he says, Mata Mistakelka, what are you looking here on the table? Do you want to really buy a diamond? So he says, yes. The Rebbe said, yes. He only has 1 ruble. But the Rebbe says, yes. He just asked if you want to buy diamonds. The answer can only be yes, because that's what the Rebbe said. You accept the first deal. Shvala Soicha, so the Soicha asked him, he says, Kama Kesev Yeshle. Okay, you want to buy a farm? How much money do you have? The Heshev, he said, I have 1 ruble. The Mishumatu Shavosa, when the merchant heard it, he started to break out in the laughter. 1 ruble, you want to buy a diamond? All you have is 1 ruble, he says. Vasoichem bal yaloim in ponolish, he says, you know what? I say you want to do business with me. I have another deal for you, he says. You have 1 ruble, he says. You know what? Yeshli bishvilcha eis gam bad ruble echad, keneyes oilam habashli, buy my oilam habo. I'm willing to sell you my oilam habo for 1 ruble. You want to buy it? Ani maskim. The Rebbe said, whatever I'm able to do, the first deal to do, this, I'm asking, he says, hey, shewish, I will be tanai, but he made a tanai, I want a contract. This little cycle of the God, I'm buying, you're selling my Olam Haba, make a contract that you are selling me the Olam Haba, right, for the price of 1 ruble. Kedas v'kedin. Hiskim ha-soichet, the soichet was maskim, and everybody was laughing. He said, this Yid is buying Olam Haba. Everybody was laughing at this stranger here. The kisser, they wrote it up. Kosev ha-chosem is devar mechiret. Kibel es ha-rubel. The soichet took the ruble. Umosa, and he gave the contract to this person. He takes the contract, goes away, he sits in one of the corners. Be'achas ha-pinois. Hoisi, gemoi, mopsak. Listen, my Yeshua must already be here. I did the deal what the Rebbe told me to do. I bought this guy's Olam Haba. So now he takes out a Gemara. Yes, can she sit and learn? He says, now can sit down and learn. He takes out a Gemara and he begins to learn. Go to the top of the sheet, number 3. Everybody was laughing, this batlin. The guy, he lost a ruble for nothing. All he has is 1 ruble. He gave up that 1 ruble to buy something like Olam Haba. So they were laughing at him. He wasted his 1 matbeah that he had. He's buying Olam Haba. You ever saw something like that? They laughed at him. Meantime, the wife of the soicher who sold his olam haba, the wife happens to come in. She was the diamonds apparently belonged to her. She can call which means all the diamonds that the soicher yarshened was from the wife's yerusha. So she had something to say. So she asked, what's everybody laughing here? What's this laughing over here? So they told her, as kol hamu'ure, what happened? So she began to tremble. He says to her husband, listen, if he says, if it was only, he says, a chelik, listen, I don't know how much olam haba you had. I don't know. But whatever chelik oilam haba that you had, so now you sold it, and now you're left even like a goy. You're like a goy now. Because you sold your oilam haba, it means you have nothing left. I don't want to live with a goy. If any that little bit of oilam haba that you might have had, you went and you sold it. So now you're left with nothing. You have no oilam haba. Ein ritzoyni lodurim goy. Ein ritzoyni lodurim goy gomer shekoze. Boyin laharav. Let's go to the rav I want to get. Let's go to the road, I want to get. So he started to mumble. It wasn't really a sale, it was just a joke. Shlemocha l'tzchoik was just a tzchoik, it was just a joke. She says, no, he says, with a goy who has no chelik l'olam haba, I don't want to live with him. No, the soichel didn't have any, it's just what he says, I have to go back to the yid and says, I'll give him back his ruble, let him give me back the olam haba. Well, my wife's going to divorce me. So the soicher went and he sends a shliach, you know, to go to the hotel to bring that yid, that yidl, and this chuset, but to bring him back. He brings him back and he says, Shema no Rav Yid. He says, the soicher says, Halaitomi, you understand? He says, what we did was just a joke. You understand it was just a joke? Who sells Olam Haba? Who buys them? It was just a joke. You know what? Here, let's go back. He says, I'm going to give you back the ruble. You give me back the contract. Loi, he says, no. Loi, he says, business is business, he says. I didn't mean it as a joke. To me it was business, he says. Esek hu esek, l'nis kavanti klal amischek. In Cain, so the Soicher says, okay, I'll give you some profit, he says. He says, you gave me a ruble. He says, I'll give you a little bit more. So he says, prophet, he says, I want 1,000 rubles. 1,000 rubles. The soicher starts to scream. He says, Mata soch, he says, what are you saying? For a piece of paper that I gave you, a contract, a piece of garbage paper, he said, you want 1,000 rubles for that piece of paper that I gave you to get it back? For Yeshua Meroslo, he says, listen, even if he wants 5,000 rubles, even if I will not live with a husband who has no olam haba, I'm not going to live with a goy. So he started to negotiate. He started to handle. So he'd see, Asoichelish, pay me a ruble. I'll give you 100. But he says, no. So he says, I want you to know, he says, I'm not a batlan, said this little chusid. He says, I'm not a batlan like you thought. I also used to be in business, and I was a great businessman. What can I do? The Rebbe runs the world. I lost my fortune, but I used to be in business. I know how to run business. He says, and my Rebbe Harav HaKudish Miyapte, my Rebbe Daptruf, give me an Eitzah, that the first business that comes my way, an Eitzah. Because I need 1,000 rubles to marry off my daughter, he says. So therefore, I'm not going to be mevater on Philip Pruta Achas Melech. Even one prut, he says, from the 1,000. I'm not going to be mevater. The soicher started to 10. I'll give you 200, 300. He doesn't insist, he doesn't give. He says, no, he says, not even one prut to less than the 1,000 rubles. Kishiroa soicher, when the soicher saw Shoah Hayudi Shalafon of Action Godel, he saw he's so stubborn. V'chol hadiburim lo yo'ilu, he says, whatever he tries doesn't help. Nelatz, he was forced to shalom lo yikol askub shidorash. He's forced to pay him. The kibbalis aksab b'chazor. Now he got the contract back. So the ho'ishe ponsa loyse Yehudi. And the woman goes now to the chus and says, I'm very happy my husband got his olam haba back. I want to go meet that tzaddik who gave you this etzah. I want to go meet that tzaddik. So she says, she writes, Leroy says, Pnei HaTzadik Me'apte. The Kovet Godel says, I'll bring him to you. I'll bring you to him. And Yaakov Alev. Nosol arrived, so he traveled to the Rebbe. B'sheboy Lishon, Nechnos Ha'elov Ha'ishav Omre. He said like this, I want you to know, I'm very happy my husband got his Olam Haba back, but I have a big question to ask you. Ani Omnom Samechosh in his Galgola Al Yodis Chus La'azolos. First of all, because of me, the Yid, right? The poor man got a Yeshua. So I'm happy that in a roundabout way, I was the cause that this poor man got his money. But I have a question. Is the Olam Haba of my husband, is it really worth 1,000 rubles? Is it really worth 1,000 rubles? So the Rebbe said, listen. He says, in the first business, he says, when he sold it from 1 ruble, it was not even worth that ruble. A person is ready to sell his olam haba, he says, for a ruble, sinishvet afilik a ruble ochnish, he said. Bemischer arishin kishemoches olam haba bad ruble echad lohoi olam haba shaloi. It wasn't even worth 1 ruble. Aval bemischer hasheni, when he bought back the olam haba, he's ready to pay for it $1,000. Now he elevated his level of olam haba. He now showed that his olam haba is worth from 1,000, and it helped to marry off the daughter of that yid. Now he said, now that your olam haba, because of your olam haba, you married off somebody else's daughter, it's worth even more than 1,000 rubles. Your olam haba. So that's, this was really the question. The question was, Esav's olam haba, or Esav's bechayre, if you're willing to sell it for nazir adashim, it's not really worth more. It's worth as much that you believe that it is worth. And that is the concept here that we find out over here too. Rishoyim did many, many mitzvahs, but if you ask them, they'll sell it to you. You know, give for $10, you can have my mitzvah tefillin, you can have my mitzvah krishma. It's not worth much to them. So Kodesh Baruch Hu says, you know what? I pay you the schar of your mitzvah taka on this world. Because to you, taka, the concept of your understanding, it's not worth more to you. This is what it is, and that in fact what it is. But as Hashem, next week we're going to see there's another concept of how Rav Desta tackles this question in a very, very interesting way to understand this. So in the meantime, my boy Saif, we'll come together, Hashem, next week. We'll continue by there.